Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, everyone. I'm Talia.
And I'm Tanya.
And together we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast.
I just walked to my apartment. My fiance's on the floor with blood everywhere. Oh no! It's an apartment.
She bleeding from.
I don't know. I can't tell. She's.
No.
I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm looking at her right now. I can't see anything. She didn't. There's nothing broken. She's bleeding. Ellie.
You don't know where she's bleeding from. Can't see where the blood's coming from.
It's. I think her head. I think she hit her head. I think. But it's up everywhere.
Hi, Tanya.
Hi, Talia.
Welcome back, everybody, to this week's episode of Crimes and Consequences. This one is somewhat of a mystery, and I don't know how I feel about it. So when I'm done, you can tell me what you think.
Okay.
I want to give a shout out to our patron, Amy, who suggested this.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, Amy. And for everybody else, I want to ask, if you haven't done so already, hit the subscribe/follow button on your favorite podcast. And you can all reach out to us and let us know what you all think about this story.
Yeah, love to hear from all of you. No, I wouldn't.
This is the story of Ellen Greenberg. Do you know this story?
No, I haven't heard.
Well, I'm going to give you a little background on Ellen. Ellen was born on June 23rd in 1983 in New York to Josh and Sandra Greenberg. Josh was a periodontist and Sandra was a dental hygienist. Ellen was their only child and they just adored her. She was described as a girly girl who was always smiling. She excelled in high school and after graduating from high school, she earned a degree from Penn State in communication. In 2011, which is when the story takes place, 27-year-old Ellen lived with her 28-year-old fiancé named Samuel Goldberg. They lived in this two-bedroom apartment in Venice Loft apartment complex, which I guess is on Flat Rock Road in Philadelphia. They'd been together for 3 years, and they had become engaged the summer before in 2010. The two planned on getting married August 13th of 2011. They were going to have this really big wedding at Hotel Hershey in Hershey, Pennsylvania. At the time, Ellen had to earn a master's degree in education, and she was working as a first grade teacher at the, I think it's pronounced Juniata Park Academy, where she'd been employed for 3 years. And Sam worked as a television producer. On January 26th in 2011, school got out early because the weather was bad. There was this large northeastern storm that was going to hit Philadelphia. Ellen arrived home before noon, and that day Sam was home too. They lived on the sixth floor of their apartment complex, and around 4:45 that afternoon, Sam went to go to the gym, and that was in the apartment complex. I don't know if it was the same building, but it was a gym in Venice Loft. When he returned home at around 5:25, He found the door was locked. He used his keys to get in, but he couldn't because the latch on the inside, there was this latch, it prevented him from accessing it. So he starts pounding on the door and he doesn't get any answer. He calls Ellen and he still doesn't get an answer. Then he begins texting her and these are the texts he sent. Hello? No response. Open the door? No response. What are you doing? No response. I'm getting pissed. No response. Hello? Again, no response. You better have an excuse. Then he writes, what the fuck? And his last text is, you have no idea. And I believe these text messages took about 12 minutes. After getting no answer from her, he went to the apartment complex lobby and he found that there was a security guard working there. I think he was working the front desk. His name was Phil Hanton, and he's 67 years old. Sam asked Phil if he would help him break the lock to get in. He said, I can't get into my apartment. But of course, what's Phil supposed to say? He's like, I can't help you break in. Sam ends up going back upstairs and breaking into the apartment himself. When he does, he finds his fiance slumped on the hardwood floor of the kitchen. She's wearing a gray purple hooded sweatshirt, gray sweatpants, and her UGG boots. Same clothes she'd been wearing when he left. I think it's maybe 45 minutes earlier. And she's covered in blood. He then calls 911. The call comes in at 6:33 p.m. And I'm going to play the call for you guys.
Oh, I just walked to my apartment. My fiance's on the floor with blood everywhere.
What is the address?
4601 Flat Rock Road. Please come. Help.
4601
Flat Rock Road.
Is this a house or apartment?
Oh, no. It's an apartment.
What apartment number?
Please hurry, please.
Where is she bleeding from?
I don't know. I can't tell. She's.
So you have to calm yourself down in order to get you some help.
I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm looking at her right now. I can't see anything. There's nothing broken. She's bleeding. Ellie!
You don't know where she's bleeding from? Can't see where the blood's coming from?
I think she hit her head. But it's up everywhere. It's everywhere.
She might have fallen. Do you know what happened?
She may have slipped. There's blood on the table. Her face is a little purple.
Okay, hold on for rescue for her. Stay on the phone.
Fire Department 842. What's the address? No,
4601 Flat Rock Road. Please hurry. Yes.
What's wrong?
I went downstairs to go work out. I came back up. The door was latched. My fiance's inside. She wasn't answering. So after about a half hour, I decided to break it down. I see her now, just on the floor, with blood. She's not responding.
Okay. Is she breathing? Look at her chest. I need you to calm down. I need you to look at her chest. It's really.
I really don't think she is.
Listen to me. Someone's on the way. Look at her chest. Is she flat on her back?
She's on her back.
Look at her chest and tell me if it's going up and down, up and down.
I don't see her moving.
Okay. Do you know how to do CPR?
I don't.
Okay. I can tell you what to do, okay, until they get there. I want you to keep her
flat. Oh, God.
Hello?
Yeah, hi. Okay.
Are you willing to do CPR with me over the phone until they get there?
I have to, right?
Okay. So get her flat on her back, bare her chest, okay? You want to rip her shirt off. Okay. She's kneel down by her side.
Oh, my God. Allie, please.
Listen, you can't freak out, sir, because you
okay, I'm trying not to. Her shirt won't come off. It's a zipper.
Rip
oh, my
off.
God. She stabbed herself.
Where?
She fell in a knife. Oh, no. Her knife's sticking out.
Her what?
There's a knife sticking out of her heart.
Oh, she stabbed herself?
I guess so. I don't know where she fell on it. I don't know.
Okay, well, don't touch it.
Okay, so I just let her down. Here now? I mean, what do I do?
No, I mean, you can't. If the knife is in her chest, it's going to be kind of hard for you to do CPR at this time.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Police, which operator?
277.
Is all someone right. coming here?
Yes, they are. You said 4601 Flat Rock, right?
Yes.
Okay, someone's on the way. And the knife is still inside?
Wait, so what?
The knife is still inside of her?
Yes, I didn't take it out.
Was it her chest or what area?
It's in her chest. It's like, it looks like it's right. It looks like it's right in her heart.
Okay, someone's on the way out there, okay? Just get
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
How old is she?
She's 27.
27. And there's no sign of life at all?
No, please don't be. What?
Bend her under her arm and tell me she responds to pain.
She's... Ellie! She's not. Her arm, her hands are still warm. I don't know what that means, but there's blood everywhere.
I know, but you can't, and the knife is still inside of her. How far? Can you see how far it went in?
It looks pretty deep.
Okay.
It looks three, and it's a long knife.
Don't touch anything.
Yeah, don't touch anything, okay?
I'm not touching anything. I can't believe this, though.
No, wait, it was just you there with her?
We're the only ones here.
And she ran in the door, you said, latched it shut?
No, I went downstairs to work out, and when I came back up, the door was latched. Like, it was, it was like locked from the inside, and I'm yelling, yelling.
Was your house broken into?
No.
So there's no sign of a break-in?
No sign of a break-in at all. I mean, there will be when you get here, because I had to break the latch, but to get in.
Okay, and this is a house, right?
It's an apartment. Fire record.
Okay, that's
helpful. Oh, my God. All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
So that was a 911 call.
That was a wild ride.
I know.
What? I'm so confused.
Well, let me tell you a little bit more about what happened. Emergency response team comes right away, and they enter the apartment. She was declared dead. She was declared dead pretty much right away. When they found her, she was slumped against a cabinet with her shoulders and neck resting on it, and a 12.5-inch serrated knife was embedded 10 centimeters into her chest. Her legs were out in front of her, so she wasn't laying flat on her back.
No, she wasn't.
She had a white towel in her left hand. It was a white kitchen towel. Her right hand had blood on it, and it was in a closed but loose fist position. Her body was taken to the medical examiner's office, and police, of course, are investigating the scene. They couldn't find any signs of any sort of intruder, only the broken latch on the door made by Sam. And robbery didn't appear to be a motive, as there was money laying out. In the apartment, they had three laptops. One was still sitting on the kitchen island. It was Sam's. Investigators couldn't find any signs that she tried to run away or escape from anyone. Like, nothing was in disarray. Blood was only found in the kitchen area. On the countertop was a bowl of blueberries and a freshly cut orange. In the sink, there were two clean knives. Now, an autopsy was conducted on Ellen the next day by the Philadelphia Medical Examiner. Ellen's body had so many stab wounds that I read the autopsy, and they had to label the wounds A, B, C, all the way down to the letter T.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's a lot of wounds. In her chest, below her neck, were 8 different knife wounds. Some of them were only 1/4 of a centimeter deep, so they weren't very deep at all. But one of them was 4 inches deep, and that was the one that was just by her heart. There were 2 deep stab wounds to her abdomen. One pierced her liver. Now, this is really weird. There were 10 wounds, knife wounds, to the back of her neck. And when I say back of her neck, I'm talking just below the hairline in that area. 2 of them were 3 inches deep. It's pretty deep.
Yeah, that's pretty deep.
On her abdomen, her right leg, and her arm, she had 11 bruises, and they were described as being in various stages of resolution. On her scalp, there was a 6.5 by 1 centimeter cut that went through her skin all the way deep into her scalp. In total, she had 20 stab wounds, 10 being to the back of her neck, as I said, right below her hairline. And one of those wounds actually injured her spinal cord. After the autopsy, the medical examiner declared her manner of death homicide. So the homicide department got involved. The homicide detectives, they're reviewing everything. The scene is still secured. They noticed that most of the blood was confined to the area where Ellen was. It was mostly under her body. There was two small areas of blood spatter on the granite countertop above where she was found. There was a little more blood splatter on the cabinet that she was found leaning against, but there was really no other blood in the apartment. On the counter was a Cutco knife block. It was by the sink. It was over on its side, and the knife found in Ellen matched one of the missing knives from the block. Police, of course, questioned Sam and Ellen's neighbors. Ellen's neighbors said they didn't hear anything besides Sam pounding on the door. So they pulled the CCTV footage from the apartment complex. Now, the footage itself only shows the entryway of the building, and it didn't show anybody strange coming in and out. There were no other cameras around, none on her floor or anything to examine.
Was this the only entrance then?
I'm guessing.
Okay.
I don't know. It's a good question. I'm guessing. They also examined the key fob info, and it matched what Sam said. To investigators, it didn't appear that there was any defensive wounds on Ellen's body like you would expect from someone who's being attacked by a knife. Her clothes and the knife were sent for DNA testing. They didn't fingerprint the knife, but they did send it for DNA testing. And the only DNA they found on it was Ellen's. As I stated earlier, Ellen and Sam lived on the sixth floor. So they looked at the balcony. And remember, there's this major snowstorm. And the balcony is very small. It was narrow. And there was so much snow on it that it was clear to investigators that no one had been on that balcony. And as I mentioned, none of the furniture was disturbed. Ellen's laptops were found in the bedroom. To authorities, it began looking more and more like Ellen may have actually killed herself.
What?
Think about it. There's no signs of an intruder. There's no robbery. There's no defensive wounds. And
they didn't find any drugs or anything in her system, like she was drugged first or?
Well, there were some drugs in her system, but I will get to that.
Okay.
Her friends and family had noticed a change in her behavior about maybe 6 weeks earlier. She seemed very anxious. She was normally a very bubbly, happy person. But when they questioned her about it, she just kept saying that her work was giving her anxiety. Or she'd say over and over again, I don't want to talk about it. And really strangely, she asked her parents in December if she could move back home with them in their Harrisburg, Pennsylvania house. Of course, her parents asked, why would you want to move back in with us? You have your fiance, you're planning this beautiful summer wedding. She said it had nothing to do with Sam. She just wanted to come home and she didn't want to talk about it. Ellen's mom, Sandra, urged her to see a psychiatrist, and she did. This was in the beginning of January. She was prescribed Zoloft, but she didn't like how it made her feel. The psychiatrist's name was Dr. Berman, and she ended up seeing Dr. Berman three times. She saw her January 12th, January 17th, January 19th. And as I said, she was originally prescribed Zoloft and a low dose of Xanax. But Ellen didn't like how those drugs made her feel. So she asked the doctor for maybe something different, and the doctor prescribed her Ambien because she was having trouble sleeping, and Klonopin. During her visits with Dr. Berman, she discussed how she felt overwhelmed with work. She was complaining about having trouble with some new school district regulations and that she was having a few difficult students, but she didn't get into any real depth about it. And I think it's interesting because she's teaching first grade.
I was going to say, isn't she teaching elementary kids?
Yeah. She expressed that she had no thoughts of suicide. And when it came to talking about Sam, she only had positive things to say about him. Of course, the psychiatrist asked, are you being abused? And she said, no, we don't have any fights. Things are fine. She just kept saying she was overwhelmed with work and she was just having severe anxiety. So you asked me, were there any drugs in her system? The only drugs that they found in the toxicology reports were Ambien and Klonopin, and they didn't find that she'd abused them in any way. During her last office visit with Dr. Berman, the doctor noted that Ellen seemed, quote, way better. And Ellen had told her mom that she was feeling really good with the new medicine. 4 days before her death, Ellen mailed out save-the-date cards for her wedding to friends and family. As a result of learning all these things about her anxiety and no one else's DNA being found on the knife and the door being locked from the inside, homicide detectives became convinced that Ellen had indeed committed suicide, even though the medical examiner had said it was homicide. And there's no note, by the way, left by Ellen. What they believed were that these shallow puncture wounds to Ellen's body were tests or hesitation wounds, and they urged the medical examiner, his name was Dr. Osborne, to change the manner of death to suicide. But remember, there was that spinal cord injury, and that concerned Dr. Osborne. How could she have possibly stabbed herself in the chest if her spinal cord had been injured? It bothered him so much that before he was willing to change the manner of death, he wanted an opinion about the spinal cord. So he reached out to a doctor named Dr. Rourke Adams, a neurologist, and he asked her to look at the injury. But instead of having her come over to the medical examiner's office, Dr. Osborne walked a section of Ellen's spinal cord, basically like in a jar, over to Dr. Rourke Adams in the very heavy snow for an informal, quote, curbside exam.
Well, this is weird.
It's very strange, right?
Yes.
Very, very strange. Dr. Rourke Adams didn't use a microscope, but she said to him, according to Dr. Osborne, that the dura, or the sheath covering the spinal cord, was cut, but not the spinal cord itself, which would indicate that Ellen wouldn't have lost motor function and she wouldn't have been paralyzed from the injury. Instead, it would have just probably caused her to feel numb, which would have allowed herself to stab herself more and not feel anything. Police believe Ellen stabbed herself repeatedly while standing near the cabinet and then slid down to the seated position on the floor where she was found by Sam.
What a weird way to kill yourself.
Eventually, Dr. Osborne agreed to reverse his original decision of homicide, and he changed Ellen's manner of death to suicide.
He did.
He did. For months, Ellen's parents wrangled with the idea that she killed herself. Her mother had spoken to her on the phone that morning, the morning she died, and she seemed fine. She was actually on her way to school, and she called her mom, and she seemed fine. She texted a friend around noon about being happy that school got out early. But this just didn't sit well with her family, and they really wanted more information. They ended up paying for a copy of Ellen's autopsy reports, photos of her body at the scene, the medical examiner's investigation report, and they sent it to the very famous Dr. Cyril Wetch. He's so well known. You met him, right, at CrimeCon?
Yeah, I met him at CrimeCon. He's like 90 years old, and he has all these books.
I believe he was one of the first people who challenged the single bullet theory of JFK's assassination.
Yeah, he gave a talk about it at CrimeCon that I went to.
Oh, well, before I tell you what his conclusions were, we're going to take a quick break.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I read Dr. Wetch's report, and in it, he notes that multiple suicidal stab wounds are very rare, and they're usually associated with multiple cuts on the wrist or multiple cuts on the throat. Often, those types of suicides, you'll see hesitation slices or cuts because they are testing and they're trying it out. But rarely has he ever seen anybody that stabbed themselves in the back. And remember, two of those stab wounds were 3 inches. He said in his report, with murder, you're usually going to get multiple stab wounds to the side, the back, the stomach. And something that he found interesting is if someone is going to commit suicide and they are going to stab themselves, they don't usually do it through their clothing because it makes it more difficult. And Ellen was stabbed through her clothing. Dr. Wetch noted that with Ellen, the stab wounds to the upper neck and lower head seemed unlikely suicidal stab wounds because the wounds themselves, specifically wounds K, L, Q, and R, and S, some were in vertical directions, left to right, and some were right to left and horizontal. And as I said, some of them are deep. He ended his report saying, quote, following the review of all the submitted documents, the results of the autopsy, and the accounts from the investigation, based upon a reasonable degree of medical certainty, it's my professional opinion that the manner of death of Ellen Greenberg is strongly suspicious of homicide.
Good enough for me. Case closed.
The family continued hiring more professionals to help them understand what happened to their daughter. They reached out to the Vidoc Society, I believe that's how it's pronounced, which is a crime-solving group, and there's one in Philadelphia. And I looked up them, and they provide pro bono expert assistance to law enforcement agencies across the United States. It's made up of volunteers that are forensic experts and investigators. Its members include profilers, criminologists, forensic scientists, medical examiners, active and retired law enforcement agencies, prosecutors, polygraph examiners, and other people skilled in solving cases. They usually do a lot of cold cases. In reviewing Ellen's case, one expert from the society noticed that Ellen had a stream of blood running horizontally across her cheek from the side of her nose left to her ear, but her body had been slumped upright in the opposite direction. And that may not seem significant, but blood shouldn't drift in that direction unless she'd been moved. Now, years have gone by, just so you know, when all of this is happening and these experts are looking at it. The family hired a former homicide prosecutor named Mr. DeAndrea to help them find out what really happened. They're still just really confused. And when he's going through Ellen's files and all the information on her case, he noticed there was no neurological report from Dr. Rourke Adams about the spinal cord injury and the damage that was done to it. So he reached out to Dr. Rourke Adams, did that curbside review, right, and asked for the spinal cord report. She wrote back, quote, I have no recollection of such a case, end quote. In 2017, Mr. DeAndrea found out something strange. A piece of Ellen's spinal cord was still at the medical examiner's office, kept in storage. So he, I don't know how, but he ended up getting a forensic pathologist named Dr. Wayne Ross to review it. Dr. Ross concluded, quote, there was evidence of a stab wound which penetrated the cranial cavity and severed the cranial nerves and brain. As a result, she would experience severe pain, cranial nerve dysfunction, and traumatic brain signs and symptoms, including numbness, tingling, irregular heartbeat, respiratory depression, neurogenetic shock, and impaired loss of consciousness. He also noted that based on the autopsy report, photographs, and all the stuff that he looked at, because he evaluated everything, he believed that there was evidence of strangulation. There was a mark over the front of her neck, which was consistent with a fingernail mark, and there were multiple bruises under her neck. The strap muscles on the right side of the neck appeared to be bruised, and he said that was compatible with manual strangulation. And again, he talked about the multiple bruises over her body, with some being fresh and some older. And he believed that the pattern of these bruises was consistent with repeated beatings. He declared the findings to be indicative of a homicide. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Henry Lee.
Oh, Dr. Henry Lee.
Yeah, and I know recently he's had some questionable things about him and some of his reports, but in 2018, he was consulted, and I read his report, and he concluded that the number and types of wounds and different bloodstain patterns were consistent with homicide. Now, there's this back and forth between the Philadelphia police department and the attorney general's office in regards to the case. In 2018, the attorney general's office for Pennsylvania conducted their own investigation into the manner of death, and they concluded that it was suicide. After a lot of pressure, a spokesperson from the attorney general's office provided something interesting that the public didn't know about before. It was a search history of Ellen's computer, and the search history was from December 18th of 2010 to January 10th of 2011. There's nothing of importance for the 16 days leading up to her death. Apparently, this search on her history had been conducted on April 1st of 2011, but this was the first time I believe it was shared with the public. So some of these entries in her computer were 7 weeks prior to her death, and that is when her family first started noticing she was behaving differently. On December 18th at 2:30 in the afternoon, someone typed in suffocation and then later went to Wikipedia and looked up suicide methods. On January 3rd, someone typed in sex fantasy death and then typed in model death. On January 6th, the word Zoloft versus Prozac was typed in and Prozac side effects. On January 9th, someone typed in girl electrocuted to death trying to Twitter in bathtub. Or that was one of the searches results. And Twitter in bathtub death. On January 10th, someone typed in quick suicide and then euthanasia and then painless suicide. Weird.
Very weird.
In October of 2019, the Greenbergs filed a civil suit against the Philadelphia Medical Examiner's Office and Dr. Osborne, the pathologist who performed the autopsy. Their goal was they really wanted to have the manner of Ellen's death changed back to either homicide or undetermined, which would allow for the investigation to be reopened. Or perhaps for them to file a possible wrongful death suit so they could try to get more information, or a suit against the city for misconduct. In their lawsuits, there were some interesting things that they alleged. They alleged that there might have been 2 knives used in the attack. They also pointed out something that I thought was interesting that I didn't know. When Sam met with the police and was questioned, he told them that the security guard was with him when he broke open the door, but that was false. And that was one of the bases that Dr. Osborne used to help convince him that it was suicide, because he believed there was someone with Sam when he came in the door. But there was no one to corroborate Sam's account of events. And I'm not blaming Sam. I'm letting y'all know I'm not blaming Sam. I'm just saying what was in their
lawsuit.
They also stated that the way the door latch was broken wasn't consistent with the way that Sam described breaking the door in. Basically, there were some like screws that were kind of loose, but had he, they believe, busted the door in the way he said, there would have been more damage done than what was done. That's what they're claiming. Because they sued, they were able to get depositions and stuff from people. And in 2019, there was an exam done by a pathologist named Lindsay Emery, who was also certified in neuropathology. And Dr. Emery conducted an exam on the section of Ellen's spinal column that was still in the storage of the medical examiner's office. During the exam, Dr. Emery discovered something that was unusual. 2 of the cuts, one to the bone and ligaments in the back of Ellen's spinal column, and a corresponding cut to the dura, had no hemorrhaging around them. Dr. Emery testified saying, quote, "Lack of hemorrhage means no pulse." She offered 3 possible explanations for the lack of hemorrhaging. There wasn't enough time between the wound that when it was inflicted and when Ellen died for it to hemorrhage. The wound didn't disrupt the tissue enough to cause a response, or Ellen was already dead when the wound was inflicted. Dr. Osborne was deposed, and he admitted that he did not reenact the wounds, examine their angles, nor measure the length of Ellen's arms or fingers to determine if it was even physically possible for Ellen to have administered the wounds herself. The court issued an opinion on the complaint that was filed, and they said, quote, "In this case, plaintiffs have alleged numerous facts demonstrating an act of controversy that is frustrated by the coroner's death certificate. Since the current death certificate reflects that Ellen committed suicide, that would present a nearly insurmountable hurdle for the plaintiffs in bringing a wrongful death action. It's not unreasonable or unjust or an abuse of discretion for the court to make a declaratory finding that Dr. Osborne may have erroneously determined Ellen's manner of death or abused his discretion by not considering whether it was appropriate to amend her death certificate under the unique circumstances of this case." What that really means is they said that Ellen's parent should have a right to have a trial brought out.
Really?
The city of Philadelphia has appealed. If they lose their appeal, the Greenberg's case against the city and Dr. Osborne will go to trial.
Go to trial to see if you abused his discretion? And
see if the manner of death should be changed.
Wow.
And that's where we're at with the case.
That's crazy. I'm not convinced she killed herself.
It's very confusing for me.
I know. Like, if she didn't kill herself,
then the question is, who did?
Yeah, who did?
But by all accounts, she only ever had positive things to say about Sam.
Right.
I'm not saying Sam did it.
No.
It's the weirdest. I would say this is like one of the weirdest cases that was ever declared suicide. But then there's that Cindy James from episode 81.
Oh, yeah. That one was crazy. Stalked to death. So if you haven't listened to it, episode 81.
Yeah, where they declared that she committed suicide, even though wasn't she like tied up, hogtied and stuff?
Yeah, it was bizarre.
Crazy story.
Yeah.
So anyway, I want to thank everybody for taking the time to listen to us this week.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Talia.
You can go to our website, Crimes and Consequences, to see some photos of this case. And if you haven't done so already, please hit the subscribe/follow button. You can also find us on social media.
At Hardcore True Crime on Instagram and Facebook.
And we have Patreon. If you've never heard us talk about it before, you can go to patreon.com/TNT Crimes, where we have exclusive episodes for our Patreon fans. They're full episodes, and you can subscribe and get early releases.
Ad-free.
Absolutely ad-free. And we have 1 million, billion, 100 trillion
episodes.
And you can also subscribe to our Apple Podcast channel and get the same stuff.
Yep. Give you the same benefits. Just go to your podcast app, your Apple app, and subscribe.
Just do it.
Just do it.
Anything else?
Nope.
No?
No.
That's it?
I think so.
Okay.
You mentioned our website, right?
Crimesconsequences.com.
There we go. Until our next episode.
Don't kill each other.
Bye.
Bye.